You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.
Hi, I'm Hannah Barnes from the Canyon SRAM Racing Team. We've just arrived in Benidorm for our training camp and the final preparations for the 2018 season. I have a lot of things I'm looking forward to in 2018. We have a really strong Canyon SRAM team this year and I believe we can have a successful season. But the one race for me I'm really looking forward to is the OVO Women's Tour. I love that race and I love racing in Britain, and after finishing third last year, I have a little bit of extra motivation to hopefully better that. I'm also really looking forward to the Euros. With it being in Britain, it'll be really special to wear the GB kit and to have a good race, especially after the GB team performance in Bergen. Yeah, that was really special, and I hope that also going into Innsbruck as well, we can really have a great race there too.
Hi, it's Abby Van Twist from Trek Dropped, and in 2018 I'm most looking forward to the Spring Classics, and especially starting in Strada Bianchi in a few weeks' time and riding on the gnarly white roads of Italy.
Hi, I'm Anna Christian, riding for Trek Drops, and my 2018 goal is definitely, first of all, April with the Isle of Man team at the Commonwealth Games. I'm really looking forward to going out there, getting stuck into the road race and the time trial. And then next part of my season is obviously the few of the World Tour races I've kind of hoped to target. Go well, I'm hoping we get an invite into the Giro and I can kind of get stuck into the Giro, look at the stages and stuff, and then also La Course. Hopefully we can get an invite into La Course as well, and I watched it last year and I really want to take part in that one day, so yeah, kind of the hillier kind of stages, races and one days, so I'm really looking forward.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Cromwell from the Canyon SRAM Racing Team, and this year I'm most looking forward to the Spring Classics and hopefully representing Australia at the home Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast.
Hi, my name is Ashley Mormont-Passio and I ride for the Cervelo Begler Pro Women Cycling Team. Coming into the 2018 season, I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into the racing and having fun this year. I'm finishing off 2017 season in good form, having had a really great off-season in my home country, South Africa, and coming into the season injury-free, I'm looking forward to having a better Springs Classic season this year. In particular, I'm looking forward to the Spring Classic races in the month of April. And another big highlight this year for me is the Zonkerland stage in the Giro d'Italia. And then, of course, always the TTT with the team. So that's also a big highlight, the Sweden TTT and the World Champs. But most of all, just looking forward to having fun with my team and racing hard and hopefully winning races.
Oh yeah, well, so coming week I straight away go back to training camp with the team again, and then I make myself ready for Nieuwsblad again like last year, and then actually I will do the whole spring till Liège, Bastion Liège, and then for sure of the first races of the spring I will have more focus on than the last ones, because yeah, now my shape is good, and I hope to do the same like last year to take it into the spring, and maybe I can race for another victory in one of the races.
I mean, the focus was on Worlds now, and cyclocross season has been very disappointing, so yeah, I'll take a short break now and have a build up to the Spring Classics, and that soon again, in 1 month I'll be back on the road.
Yeah, I've always dreamt of going to the Commonwealth Games, so that's my biggest goal ever. So that will be in April, so hopefully I'll get selected for there, but I'll be flying to South Africa in 2 weeks for the first Mountain Bike World Cup and racing the full mountain bike season with Trek Factory Racing. So yeah, it's not going to slow down.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinawi.
Hello, Richard.
And today we're joined by a special guest.
Woo!
Rose Manley.
Hi,
Rose.
Richard. Hi, Orla.
Hello, Rose.
Lovely to be here.
Rose will be familiar to a lot of you as the voice on a lot of the highlights from Women's World Tour events. That's been your role the last couple of years, hasn't it?
Yep. Doing the highlights, doing the features for InCycle. But I've broken away from that now and started my own production company. But
you're out on your own.
I am.
But you might still be doing a bit of that this year, yeah. Possibly. We might still hear you.
Exactly. Certainly keeping my hand in.
Great. Well, you've got an interesting perspective on the first 2 years of the Women's World Tour. As we look ahead in this episode to the 2018 Women's World Tour, we were played in at the start there by a few voices from, well, riders, voices belonging to riders.
Reassemble words in correct order to make a comprehensible sentence.
Yeah, saying words. looking ahead to this year, saying what they were looking forward to. We heard from, well, most of them introduced themselves, but we also heard from Evie Richards, who was speaking to Lionel Burney at the World Cyclocross Championships recently, Mariana Voss, and Lucinda Brand. So we heard from them, and we're looking ahead to the season as well. We've got an interview also with Lisa Brenner, who's changed teams, and with Juan Pablo Molinero from Movistar, who's running the new women's team for Movistar. We'll hear from him later on. In the final part, we're going to go over some of the feedback that we got from you the end of last year in the form of emails and in our listeners' survey. Really appreciate all the feedback. Last month, of course, we heard an extended interview with Robin Morton, who ran a men's team at the Giro d'Italia in 1984, wasn't it, Orla?
Oh, no, you put me on the spot.
Yeah, it was 84. And Mandy Jones, the 1982 World Road Race champion, now Mandy Bishop. Mandy Jones, I'm delighted to say, will be in the audience at our forthcoming show in Salford, at the Lowry.
Get it right.
At the Lowry in Salford. That kicks off our little book tour that we're doing. Orla, you're taking part in some of those events, including
one
in Salford.
Yeah, I can't wait. I really can't wait. Yeah, to coincide with the publication of our first book, which
is called A Journey Through the Cycling Year. And that Salford event is on the 28th of February. The following night, we will be doing an event in Edinburgh at the Signet Library. The following night, Friday the 2nd of March, at Oran Mór in Glasgow. Then the following week in Nottingham on the 7th of March. On the 8th of March, we'll be in London in Hackney. And on Friday, March, we'll be in Leeds. And then the following night in Sheffield to finish it off. And all the details, dates and tickets are available on thecyclingpodcast.com. Selling quickly, but there are a few tickets left for some of those events. thecyclingpodcast.com. So Orla, you'll be joining us in Edinburgh,
Salford.
Glasgow, Salford and London.
That's right. Yeah. And for anyone who's disappointed that they've missed out, we've missed out their corner of the British Isles and Ireland. We've got more dates planned later in the year as well, don't we?
We do.
Just in case anyone's feeling that we've neglected them, we haven't.
No, we're looking to organise a few more events in November. So stay tuned for that. And the book, A Journey Through the Cycling Year, will be available from the 1st of March. So
a little frisson of nerves even thinking about it.
All good bookshops. That's a lot of early advertising out the way. But yeah, we had a lot of really good feedback on last month's episode. People, I think, particularly enjoyed hearing from Mandy Jones, you know, a real pioneer and a fascinating story and a career that was obviously successful. But you wonder what she might have done in the modern era with the kind of support that's available now to talented and determined riders like that. Anyway, this month we're looking ahead, but we want to look back briefly because the racing has started already. And one of the things you asked for in your listener feedback was a sort of regular news roundup like we have in the regular episode. So Orla, take it away.
Yeah, can I just caveat this with you dropping this in my lap when I turned up at your house this morning? So luckily, I do take little notes as the races go along, but I haven't
scripted this.
I haven't scripted this a la Lionel's news roundup. I do pay attention, but you'll have to forgive me as I read it from the notes that I've made as the races were happening. Anyway, the season kicked off with the Santos Women's Tour. Annette Edmondson won stage one of Wiggle High Five, an Adelaide local. Stage two, taken by world silver medalist Katrin Garfoot. Amanda Spratt took stage three, defending champion, of course, and Chloe Hosking on stage four. And it was Amanda Spratt who won 2 years in a row. She also graduated from university just about a week afterwards. So a busy old start to the year for Amanda. Then we had the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Race, or I think as it's fully known, the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Race Towards Zero Race Melbourne, which
was wonderful for social media.
The Cadel Evans Great Ocean Race Towards Zero Race Melbourne. Get that into a hashtag if you dare. I'm afraid I have to interrupt my own news roundup because somehow at the time of recording, I managed to get the Cadel Evans Road Race result hopelessly wrong. I'm going to argue that since Lionel goes for a 60% accuracy rate on the regular podcast, I didn't want to shame him with 100% first time out. So here on Femina, we're going to go for a solid 80% accuracy target. So for the Cadell Evans Great Ocean Road Race, first place was Chloe Hosking of Ali Cipollini, Gracie Elvin of Mitchelton Scott in second, with Georgia Bronzini of Silence Pro Cycling on the bottom step of the podium. And then the Women's Herald Sun Tour Stage 1 was taken by Brodie Chapman. Never heard of her. Well, more on her in just a little second. She took Stage 1 ahead of Annemiek van Vleuten. Van Vleuten, I say, but Rose is sitting next to me and I know that she says Van Vleuten, so I should say it properly, Van Vleuten, with Chloe Hosking in third. And then Stage 2 was a 1.6 kilometre individual time trial taken, as you would imagine, by world champion Annemiek van Vleuten, Catherine Garfoot, the Australian time trial champion, second, and Georgia Williams of Mitchelton Scott women's team in third. But overall win in that race went to Brodie Chapman, who may be quite an unfamiliar name to most people because she's not even a full-time racer. In her on the podium, she thanked her employers for giving her the day off, the time off to race this. She is a full-time digital content editor normally for Bike Exchange, I think it is. And she had no rides lined up beyond the Road Nationals, no coach, no team. And she was actually working at the Santos Men's Tour Down Under when she got a phone call inviting her to the Cadell Evans race and to the Herald Sun Tour. And off she went and won. So fantastic. So we may hear quite a bit more of her in the future. And then just very briefly, the Women's Cyclocross World Championships in Valkenburg. Belgium's Sanne Kant, the defending champion, took first spot there. Katie Compton of the US, who has been US national champion since forever, got the silver medal, and the Netherlands' Lucinda Brand in third. And in the under-23s, Evie Richards won for Great Britain for the second time in 3 years. 38 seconds ahead of, forgive my pronunciation, Salen Del Carmen Alvarado of the Netherlands. And third place went to Nadia Heigl of Austria. And that is my version of your news roundup.
That was very good. For a first effort.
Thank you. I'll work harder next time.
It was very good. Very comprehensive. We've had Katie Compton and Evie Richards were on a podcast that we did last year looking at cyclocross, weren't they?
Yeah.
Both of them. They rode well there. Terrible conditions of Valkenburg. We produced a series of podcasts from the Cyclocross World Championships. Lionel Burney was there in the mud, getting very cold. He's come back with a bit of lurgy.
And eating the hide of dead animals, I heard.
That's normal for Lionel, I think.
That was just starters. Fascinating podcasts. I really enjoyed those.
They were good. I didn't watch any of it, but I listened to the podcast. Some surprising results in the women's races. I think, you know, people like Pauline Ferrand-Prévot was highly fancied. She's been back on form this winter, but I don't think the course really suited her. Marianne Vos as well was pretty far down.
We heard from her at
the start. The cyclocross, that's it, finished for another year, and we're into the road. I mean, you mentioned there the road calendar in full swing, really, or at least in Down Under. But the Women's World Tour doesn't kick off until the 3rd of March, Strade Bianche, quite late, really. There already have been several men's events by then. It's still a pretty streamlined calendar, 20 events in total, 3 new events on the Women's World Tour this year. But, you know, that compares to 37 events on the Men's World Tour calendar, which includes 3 3-week stage races. And a lot of overlap there, a lot of clashes, and really no coherence to it, hasn't captured the imagination. We were talking earlier about, you know, I can tell you who won the last 2 Women's World Tour overall, and it seemed to mean something to them both. I cannot tell you who won the Men's World Tour last year. I'd have to look it up. But as I say, it's growing gradually. We'll hear from Rose in a moment just on how you feel it is 2 years in. But new events this year. 3 days of Depan is a 1-day event. It's like the 4 days.
The 1 day of Depan seems a bit unnecessary.
It can be 5 days or 3 days. The old 3 days of Depan obviously has been part of the on the men's calendar for years and years. It's now a 1-day race for women. There's the well-established stage race in the Basque Country in Bira has been added to the Women's World Tour. 5-day race won by Ashley Moulman-Passio last year. That's part of the Women's World Tour. And the Tour of Huangji in China, which was a new event last year for the men, that on the 21st of October, a one-day race there will be, well, that'll be the final event, actually, of the Women's World Tour, which takes away a little bit from the showpiece finale in Madrid the last couple of years, where not perhaps the most inspiring race in Madrid, but it has allowed the Women's World Tour winner to be hailed. I say that, but the Women's World Tour winner didn't go to Madrid, did she, last year?
No.
So just contradicting myself completely there.
It's at least, nice, I know idea, what you mean. It's though, a nice finale, though, because you've got the crowd there, you've got the media there.
It feels...
It's an event, it's regardless of what the racing is. Whereas I feel this, and it's preempting a little bit, but a one-day race in China...
Without TV cameras, if that's the same as last year, you would hope there'll be TV coverage at the very least. Hopefully Rose will be there, bringing us highlights.
Live from China.
Yeah.
Just before we go on to talk about the calendar this year, I believe the Madrid Challenge will expand this year to 2 days.
Should we have
exciting.
A trumpet sound here?
We like to be understated, don't we? We just sneak these things in.
Speak for yourself, Richard. Have we met?
Yeah, I believe the Madrid Challenge will be a two-day event this year. I don't think that's not absolutely 100% confirmed. It certainly hasn't been announced yet, but I do believe it will be a two-day event, which is great, especially as La Course appears to have gone back down to one day. And we'll hear later on about the new Movistar team. There seems to be a lot happening in Spain. You know, obviously the new World Tour stage race in the Basque Country as well. Things are stirring in Spain. But Rose, you've been heavily involved in the Women's World Tour the first 2 years of it. How do you feel it is developing? What's it done well? What could it do better?
I feel like I don't want to be the moany voice in women's sport, which is there's so many of those already. But I would say it really has, I think, brought up the exposure of women's cycling. But there's plenty of room for improvement. I think that probably the riders themselves may have held the World Cup, which was the forerunner to the Women's World Tour, in a little higher stead, because it was all one-day races. If you won the World Cup overall, then you were the best one-day rider. It kind of, the Women's World Tour, they've got stage races, they've got like 10 days like the Giro Rosa, you've got cobble classics, you've got everything, which sounds great, putting everything on a higher stage. But it means the person who's the best rider in the Women's World Tour, probably the best rider overall, but not necessarily. It kind of depends which races the riders prioritise, which ones they decide to turn up to, or which ones the teams decide to turn up to, quite importantly.
Is that partly a novelty thing, though, in terms of trying to bed in the new system? I mean, I'm just thinking of the fact that if you're wearing the Women's World Tour jersey, if you're the leader at any given time, then you're almost obliged to turn up to the World Tour races. I think that's probably quite a good thing, and maybe makes it then more comprehensive in terms of who wins overall. Is it just a question of maybe taking time?
Well, you're not actually obliged, though, are you?
No.
I mean, team-wise, though, it's not... I remember when Corinne Rivera was wearing the leader's jersey, and she wasn't scheduled to turn up to the next race. And she'd said she wasn't racing the next
Yorkshire,
race.
Was it
Yorkshire? Yeah. Lo and behold, she's there in the start line. So I'm not saying that they're contractually obliged, but... there seems to be that growing pressure from teams that if you're wearing the jersey, you flaunt it.
I'm not exactly sure about how much that holds water, especially when you have things like Chongming coming in the middle of the year. Mm. Some of the big teams don't even go to Chongming because it's, 3 days of sprinting on the same finish line. But I certainly think that, like Rich was saying earlier about the men's world tour, not really... you don't have a jersey wearer there. There's no kind of cohesion there. And I think what the Women's World Tour is trying to accomplish is a very good thing. Trying to have it so that there's the same characters appearing in every race, that fans can have people to root for in every race, that they know who the big names are, the big riders. But I'm not sure if that is actually translating at the moment.
I just did a bit of cheating on pro cycling stats there, Orlan. It was Liège-Bastogne-Liège that Conor Rivera missed, in fact.
She missed it.
Yeah, and I remember I spoke to her at Flesh Wallonne, and she was leading the Women's World Tour, and she was adamant then that Liège-Bastogne-Liège was not in her plan, and so she wouldn't ride it. And even after riding really well at Flesh Wallonne, she finished seventh there. She gave Liège-Bastogne-Liège-Metz, which I was surprised about.
I'm totally incorrect, and I was sure.
But she did ride in Yorkshire.
The next one. Okay. Then scrap that. Yeah, you're right, Rose.
It's too late. we don't scrap anything, Carla.
I don't mean cut it out. I just mean scrap what I said. Yeah,
no,
I was wrong.
Hang on. You weren't wrong. You weren't wrong. She didn't. Oh, I see. You were wrong about it. Just not used to saying you're wrong, Orla. You know, I mean, like, this is the first time.
Well, it's kind of dumbfounded me as well. I've stunned myself everything. Into silence.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting what you say, Rose, because my impression, I get that, and I remember, you know, the World Cup was, it made some kind of sense from that point of view. But do you not think there's an argument for a world, you know, women's World Tour champion finding the best all-rounder? I mean, you know, it has rewarded riders, we've seen that the last couple of years, who can perform well in one-day races, stage races, and time trials. And I think already just 2 years in, well, what's your sense from the riders themselves? What is it meaningful for them, do you think?
I think it kind of varies on the rider. I mean, some will see it as, if you're the Women's World Tour leader, if you're doing very well in that league, then it absolutely proves that you are a very strong rider, you're very consistent, and you're good on all terrains. But I think for others, getting the pink jersey, the Giro Rosa, would be is more important. And I suppose it's just having that, everyone knows what the Maglia Rosa is. Whether you follow women's cycling or men's cycling, it has such a prestige, which I think the Women's World Tour doesn't have at the moment, but maybe that's something for the future, that it will have that.
And don't you think as well that sometimes what the riders rate as most important is certainly very important in the sport, but actually we're talking about trying to introduce a wider audience to the sport. And in that sense, a very simple, streamlined narrative like the Women's World Tour is actually very useful for people outside of cycling even, never mind people who are already into men's cycling and trying to bring them across, but people who you're trying to introduce to cycling for the first time, that it's quite an easy thing to get your head around in a sport that is quite complicated like cycling.
I do think it gives the race that Women's World Tour, it does give them a certain prestige. It means that they have to meet a certain requirement, which I think is very important in women's cycling, that from the organisational side of things, certain things are met, and just things like the riders having showers for a place for the buses to park. And I think that does the sport very well, because it makes it look like a professional thing. And those appearances are absolutely key in getting more fans into the sport and seeing it as these athletes as prime, proper, professional athletes. And I think that's very important.
But, I mean, Rose, we've seen a huge variation in terms of those standards of professionalism and sort of infrastructure around races. What, having been to all of them, do you see that as well? Is there a huge kind of difference between the best? I mean, what is, in your view, the best race in terms of the best organized, where there's the best support for women, and which are the races that are perhaps still have got to catch up?
I think the Ovo Energy Women's Tour is far and away the best organised, because it's a standalone women's event, and the crowds it gets are incredible, and the reputation it has built over just a few years of running is massive. It's now the race that people want to go to because the crowds are amazing, they know they'll be well looked after, they'll have everything they need, and it's good racing as well. The races that are not doing so well, it's difficult. They all kind of have... The ones that are tied to men's races are always going to look good, always going to be very shiny on the outside. But that's because it's easy, because you're just sending athletes down the same track, which has already got barriers and big finish lines, big crowds. So it's easier for those, I think, to look like they're doing a good job when maybe they're not.
That's interesting.
What is it then about the Ovo Women's Tour that, Women's Tour, that other races can learn from? Because it's consistently, if not constantly, name checked as the pinnacle really of women's racing currently. What are they doing right? What can everybody else learn from it? And I'm not even talking about the organization, but they get the crowds there, they get an interest there, they get a level of TV coverage that we just don't see elsewhere. What are they doing right, and how can anybody else learn from it?
I think it's a lot of the promotional stuff beforehand. It's getting schools involved. If you have a look at the crowds when you're passing, a lot of them are school kids that have been just taken out for the morning or the afternoon to go and have a look at these riders going past. I think it kind of helps that it's in the UK. Everyone wants something to do and there's a free event on. There's something to go and watch. That kind of helps. Yeah. Although the weather doesn't necessarily help it. But I think in Belgium, Holland, I mean, bike races are to a penny. There's always a bike race on. I think it has a bit more of a event, a bit of ceremony about it because it is in the UK. But also they just treat the riders very well. I mean, there's a proper podium. There's proper prizes. It's something that's much more worth doing. It's, yeah, good hotels, that kind of thing.
It's interesting you mentioned the Giro Rosa. We've got a chapter in our forthcoming book by Ashley Moulman-Passio comparing the Giro Rosa and the Women's Tour, and it's really, really interesting because one is sort of rooted in cycling tradition. The Maglia Rosa, obviously, has got a big head start on a new race like the Women's Tour, but she just compares those two events, Women's Tour and Giro Rosa, in terms of what it's like as a rider to compete in each and how that magic of the Maglia Rosa can be very seductive, but perhaps that allure fades over time as it has done for her. It's a really interesting chapter she's written.
Yeah, because she fell out of love with it because of the organisation.
Don't give it away, Orla.
Oh, sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, still buy the book.
I don't think people are really reading for the denouement of the stories, to be perfectly honest.
Anyway.
You can Google who won each of these races.
Let's hear from Lisa Brenner, the German rider who has moved over the winter from Canyon SRAM, a team that she's been at for a long time in its various guises. She's moved across to Wiggle High Five. I met her at the WNT get-together because she lives in Kempten in Germany, where that team is based. Her boyfriend is actually a mechanic for the team. So she was there, and I took the opportunity to speak to her. Her arm was in a sling, and she had a black eye, having crashed recently on the track, and we'll hear a bit about that. But she said some very interesting things about the increasing specialisation of some of the top women, which might, over time, undermine or sort of make the Women's World Tour a less fair reflection of the best all-rounder, because I think as the standard goes up and up, we'll see, as we do in men's racing, women being more selective about which events they do. We'll see. That might happen in the next 5-6 years. But anyway, here is Lisa Brenner. So Lisa, you're looking for a big change next year. How did it come about that you moved teams after so long in the same setup?
Yeah, as you just said, it's been a long time. I think like 6 years in the same structures of a team. And I've been reflecting a lot about myself and asked myself also for reasons why I'm not on the same level than I used to be and why things are sometimes not going like I want. And so I decided that maybe a change is something that can bring new challenge, new motivation, new input also from other people. And it's really exciting for me to do a big change, and I'm ready for it. And I hope that this will also open new doors for me to improve and get back to where I want to be.
What was it about Wiggle that attracted you? Was there anything about the team? Was it the people there? Was it the other riders there who you thought, I'd like to be part of that team, I'd like to be part of that environment?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mix of everything. I think it has always been a very professional team and a successful team as well. And I have to be honest, I also like the riders. When I signed, I didn't know exactly yet what will be the full team, but for example with Elisa Longoborghini, you have a very strong but also from a person very nice character and somebody I really look forward to working with.
And I was going to ask you as well about your injuries at the moment. Your arm is in a sling and you're sporting quite an impressive black eye there. Tell me what happened and what the prognosis is.
So I've been taking part at European Track Championships, and in the team pursuit, we had a really big crash, and we went down pretty hard. But I have to say that I yeah, I have a broken arm and some bruises and open parts, but that's all right. I'm fine. I don't have pain, but it's going to take some weeks to heal up. Yeah, about 4 to 6 weeks till I will be back on a bike. But I find myself lucky. I think I'm in a lucky situation because now I at least have the time to heal up fine and not have the pressure to get back to racing as fast as possible. And I think it's a pretty lucky situation.
Is that something you've seen over the last few years, racing becoming far more tactical? I mean, it's only a few years ago, it seems, that Marianne Vos seemed to win everything. You know, there seemed to be one or two riders who were quite dominant, whereas now tactics seem to come into it far more.
Yeah, I think that women's cycling overall has done a big step, and this is also one step. I mean, more and more riders are really professional riders. They don't need to go to work, basically, to make a living, but they can really only focus on cycling, and you can see the development really happening. And what I find also interesting is that the specialization is getting bigger. So you have the time trialists, the climbers, the sprinters. So it's really hard to be an all-rounder and be good in everything. You see more and more, like in men's cycling, that people specialize in one thing and make this their main target. And it's also part of this development.
I guess how does that affect you then? Because that means also, as an all-rounder, and you know, what do you target? What do you have to make quite tough decisions about when you want to be in form and what races you want to go for?
Yeah, I think that goal setting is getting bigger. I mean, look at the spring season. It's getting more and more busy. You have all those new classic races coming up, Amstel Gold Race and Liège, Bastogne-Liège, for example. And so if you want to be good in those spring races, you have to make a good preparation for it, but then also make sure that you get a little break to be ready for the next step in the season. And it's the calendar is becoming so full that you have to make good decisions about what races to target, where to put your season highlights, and this is getting more and more important as the calendar is getting full and so many big races are coming up.
And does it affect the way that you, I mean, you're saying you want to change things, you want to find the form that you had maybe a couple of years ago, do you change your training, or do you try and go back to what you were doing then? What do you do to give yourself the change that you need?
I will also start working with a new coach. So for me, it was important to, when I make a change, then I wanted to make a really big change, like change not only environment, but also have new people to work with. And this is one big part of it. So I'm excited to work with somebody new and have new input also on my training. And for sure, I'm still targeting the time trials, as this is really has always been my biggest strength, and it will stay my main focus. But yeah, I'm now next week having a big talk about next year and what the races are going to be that I want to target and highlight in my season. And yeah, it's an exciting progress that's happening right now.
So finally, if you could win one race next year, what race would you most like to win?
I really, I haven't won a big classics race. So this is still something like a one-day race. I always have been good in the stage races. So for me, it would be really cool to win one of those big classics one-day races, because it's something that I haven't reached before.
You have to name one, though.
So I think that Drenthe is maybe one that's really would suit me very well. And Gent-Wevelgem, this is races that I really like. And yeah, Flanders was always a dream for me to win, but now it has become so hard, so more for the climber style of cyclist, and so yeah, I think Gent-Wevergem, if I have to choose one.
Yeah, it might not suit you so well, but you've almost got a local world championship next year.
Yes, it's true, yeah. Innsbruck is really close, and I will go there next week to see the courses. I'm really excited about it because it's good for me to know what's coming up and where I have to prepare for. I mean, I've seen the road race on paper, and I'm pretty sure that it's not the race that's going to suit me very well. But anyway, I'm going to look at all of the three courses and from then on make a good plan how to prepare the best for it.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com. If you enter the code SISCP25, that's SISCP25. It was 20% last year and it's 25% this year. I'm actually looking at in Orla's box of energy balls here, not yet produced by Science and Sport.
Not yet, we're working on it.
You're still trying to sell them the recipe, aren't you?
I think it's less science and more magic. What goes
yeah. Oh,
balls.
I like it. Yeah, my little magic potion. I have adjusted the recipe, as you know. So I've got my original classic recipe this morning, but also one with a little bit of coffee. So, yeah.
But just to be I'm clear, that if you want proper sports nutrition, Science and Sport, I realize it's... I shouldn't have segued from you know, advertising the wares of our brilliant sponsor, Science and Sport, the world's leading manufacturer of sports nutrition products.
All us aren't 25% off either.
No, they're not. They're very much not.
And you can't actually get mine, so you might as well buy Science and Sport.
Yeah.
Unless you're my friend, you don't get my energy balls. I've just picked up a caffeine one. It's quite nice.
Are you going to bring some energy balls around on our book tour?
That's a good idea.
Just think of, you know...
To increase my workload, I'm going to have enough to do.
Getting more people to sign up.
All right, then.
A free energy ball on every seat.
No! I've got thousands of energy balls.
Yeah, I'm joking.
We're going to do a little competition.
Not sure
we're
going to
do an in-house competition where you can win a little bag of energy balls. How's about that?
Great. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you see that?
It's energy balls for the best question on the night.
Oh, we'll brilliant.
Do a Q&A.
So
the best question each night, we'll win a little bag of energy balls.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And I'm going to play with the recipe a little bit as well. I might throw some chili in for a bit of fun. So yeah, you know, don't know what kind of mixture you'll get by then.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it? chili. Unexpectedly biting into a chili energy ball. Just what you need.
You don't know what it's going to be and you don't know what your stomach's going to do.
No,
either.
Exactly. Yeah. No, they're good. They're all natural. It's all healthy.
Back to women's cycling.
Yeah.
We heard before the break there from Lisa Brenner, who was chatting in the off-season about, you know, changing things around. I mean, she's just turned 30. Quite a brave move at her age, not to say that she's old or anything, but to really comprehensively change things and work with a new coach, new team, obviously, and really not go back to what she did a few years ago to, you know, have the kind of form she won the women's tour, didn't she? And she's won some big races in the past. And just over the last couple of years, has seems to have plateaued a little bit and not really developed as she would like, because those are usually your strongest years, 28, 29, 30. So... changing things around and hoping that she rediscovers that old form in 2018, and she had some interesting things. Other changes this year. I mean, we were chatting as we were listening to that about some of the other sideways moves in the women's peloton. I mean, Rose, can you remind us of some of the moves that are happening?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moves in the sprinting game, which is very exciting. But Kirsten Veal going to Wiggle, Jolene Dore leaving Wiggle to go to Mitchelton Scott. Bronzini also leaving Wiggle to go to Silence. It really gives it quite a lot of teams involved now in the sprints. And I think that's a good sign. It means that maybe teams are building sprint trains and lead out trains, which I think would be really good for the women's sprints, definitely.
I think it'd be really good for the classics as well, and certainly for the spring part of the season, because I loved that last year anyway, and I think that's really starting to take off slightly. But, you know, Lisa's saying there that she would love to get a win at Gent-Wevelgem. She was second, I think, in 2016. Jolene Dore, who was second last year. We've got those kind of you know, there's battles going on at the top for the top of the podium at the Classics. And I think that's going to be, make it really exciting. But I think Gillian Dore is going to be a really interesting one, actually. Maybe get more of a leadership role at Mitchelton Scott and see what she can do.
Strong old team, though, isn't it, Mitchelton Scott?
Yeah.
With Annemiek van Vleuten Vleuten.
It is, but when we're looking at the likes of Gent Wevelgem or whatever, you know, you would think that she would have quite a strong position there to be in a leadership role for that one. So I think that could shape up to be a rather spicy little race. Mm.
They've also got Sarah Roy as well there, who is a very fast finisher as well, kind of almost similar to Jolene Dore in that sense, kind of classics sprinter.
And we haven't, the interesting thing is we haven't mentioned Bulls Dolmans in this chat about the women's teams. I mean, not maybe so many changes there. Still the benchmark, I suppose. And you would say dominant, but not perhaps as dominant last year as the previous year. Certainly signs that, you know, that the other teams and riders are capable of challenging.
Yeah, not as dominant, but they still have a ridiculous roster. I mean, it is ridiculous. With Anna van der Breggen, with Lizzie Deignan, with
Megan Garnier.
They've also got an interesting neo-pro coming through, Skylar Schleider, who they've signed for this year. She was 2016 silver medalist at the Junior Road Worlds, fourth in the time trial, and last year won stage six at the International Lotto Turingen Ladies Tour. So, you know, they're bringing riders up through. I guess at the top level, you're not going to get very many transfers into Bowles Dolmans, are you? Because where on earth can they possibly slot anyone else in? It's not even that they've been dominant and any of them are necessarily much on the wane. But it's good to see that they're bringing that strong talent through from the bottom as well. But it would be lovely to see a bit more of a challenge to Bowles Dolmans, which hopefully we'll get out with these transfers.
And how could we forget Emily Diderichsen as well?
Indeed, of course.
You know, world champion the year before last and bronze medalist last year as well, which, you know, she did quite a quiet season in the rainbow jersey, really, though it was maybe unfair to expect a lot from her. She's still only 21.
Yeah. She did win Ronde van Drenthe.
Yeah, she won Drenthe, which is kind of early on, and then kind of went into a domestique role, which is... It's kind of what you need at Bowles Dolmans,
and kind of what you would have expected in normal circumstances. Mm. You know, she was a surprise winner of the world title, and you know, clearly still a developing talent. Cervelo Bigla, of course, with Ashley Bowman Passio, and Cecily
Utrup-Ludwig. I'm really excited by her this year. I'd love to see what she steps up and does.
Thanks for letting me say. I had a clear run at it there. Yeah, I just needed time.
You could see the takeoff board.
You both jumped in. You both jumped in. It is like a triple jumper,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, it is. That's what I was alluding to. Yeah,
you got the as a former triple jumper.
Well, yeah. Well, you got the first step, the second step.
Do the listeners know about your? Sorry to veer away from cycling here onto the track, but Orla, former Northern Irish triple jump champion.
Former. All-Ireland triple jump.
All-Ireland. Oh,
thank you very much. Twice over.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, not that I like to talk about it.
We've got a garden here. Go and show us what you can do.
Well, I can't, you see, because you've forced us to take our shoes off to come into your wonderful, spanking, shiny den, your office area. So I'd have to stick my
While we're on other sports, I mean, I should also say that in the last month I've been skiing with you, Orla.
Oh, yeah, we have been skiing.
Rechristen you Ski Orla, because, of course, your Twitter handle is Sky Orla. You are Ski Orla, and you did.
I'm so strong.
You did come out with a great quote on the ski holiday.
Oh, Richard, skiing.
We should run a competition to guess the quote, but no one will get it.
What was it even?
I'll save your blushes, shall I?
Well, I can't even remember what it was. I remember you laughing a lot,
skiing,
but I thought, really?
You were perfectly sincere when you said this. Yeah. You said skiing to you is not a sport; it's a lifestyle.
Well, because we were talking competitive sport and you were like, we were chatting about how competitive you are in skiing. And we were having like a coffee and a Red Bull and
Van Show.
This was in the morning, but we were having some refreshments at an ice bar with rather thumping music for 11:30 in the morning. But that was I was trying to say that I'm not competitive in skiing. It's just I embrace it as a way of life.
You look pretty competitive to me.
Anyway, I
ate a lot of your snow. anyway, back to cycling. Canyon SRAM obviously lost Lisa Brenner, who's been a real mainstay of that team. And it's interesting when also, it's not just about riders coming in, it's about riders moving on as well. And I think Wiggle High Five Bronzini has been a real figurehead in that team right from the start. And sometimes having a rider like that, you know, when they move on, it frees something up. There's a not to describe Bronzini as a blockage, but when a team is so focused on a rider with her particular asset, which is a strong sprint, it can affect the way that team rides. And, you know, Lisa Brenner mentioned in the interview there, Lisa Longo-Borghini, very, very strong rider. And the two of them could be quite, you know, quite potent together in the same team. Canyon SRAM as well have obviously lost Lisa Brenner, and they've brought in Alice Barnes, a very exciting young prospect, Hannah Barnes' sister.
And Nivea Doma.
We haven't even Kasia, mentioned Nivea Doma.
Yeah. Nivea Doma. Kasia Nivea Doma, who obviously went very close in the Ardennes last year and, you know, came up against Bowles Dolmans, but in a stronger team, which she's certainly joined now, she might just move on to converting more of those podium placings into wins.
I think she would be really one to watch because she really did that. Those podiums that she got in the Ardennes, they were solo achievements, I would say. I mean, she was kind of left on her own quite early on, and then she's battling against Bowles, two of the really the strongest riders in the peloton. She managed to hold her own, not get the victory, but yeah, I mean, she's a really exciting rider, very energetic, animates a race, so she'll be one to watch, absolutely.
And second at Strada Bianchi as well, so it'll be interesting to see how she does at the first race out. I think as well, what's really interesting about her is sometimes you can't quite define why a rider, why an athlete just has it in any given moment in time. And it just looks like from the outside that she maybe has a whole sum of things coming together in her life that maybe could contribute to her doing something quite wonderful this year, I think. And it's not anything you can ever put your finger on at any given time until things start to go wrong. But she just seems to me like someone who has it all sorted right now and could do something quite marvellous in 2018. I'm really excited about her.
And Pauline from Prevost as well is still at Canyon SRAM. I guess we'll still be dividing her time between road and mountain biking. But, you know, we didn't see the best of her last year. It does seem like things have come together for her again. I mean, although she had a disappointing World Championships in cyclocross, she's ridden well over the winter, seems to be strong again, and could really be a very powerful teammate for Nivea Doma, especially in those hilly races.
And apparently they're good friends, I think, as well. I think they get on very well off the bike, apparently. So that can be a big factor. And I think with Ferron Prevost, a lot of her problems are maybe coming from being on such a high and being so feted in France, and then maybe not living up to quite the expectation at the Olympics and whatnot. So maybe she just needs to get back into convincing herself that she can win again, get back into that mentality. And I think, if she starts to believe in herself again, then that could be quite exciting to see what she can do on the road.
Yeah, she's absolutely a confidence rider. I mean, even I remember talking to her about when she had a breakthrough win at Flèche Wallonne. And the only reason she went for it is because at the very bottom of the Mer de Fouy, Marianne Vos said, her teammate said, go on, you've got it, go. And she was like, really? And Marianne was like, go, go, go. And then she won. So, I mean, she really needs to have that confidence and the support of her teammates to do well. I think so she'll do well this year.
Isn't that fascinating that she wouldn't have necessarily gone for the win otherwise? That's brilliant. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, I think she's very much reliant on kind of feeling good and knowing that she's doing well. Mm. So she's had a great winter and I think she'll do well this year.
Well, another big change this year will be the new Movistar team, women's team. News broken on the cycling podcast during the Vuelta that Movistar were setting up a women's team. Thanks to Fran Reyes for that.
Without a trumpet, because I wasn't there.
No trumpets. But Hannah Troop recently went to a get-together for Movistar and spoke to Juan Pablo Molinero, who has had a marketing role in the team in the past. Interesting background himself in sport and business, and he's been one of the people putting together that Movistar women's team. So she spoke to him, and here's what he had to say about the new team.
My name is Juan Pablo Molinero. I'm the marketing chief of marketing at Movistar team, what was male team till this year. So next year will be also a female team.
So when did it all start, the process of setting up a female team for Movistar?
It's been a pretty fast process, I would say. Beginning of this year, we began to talk with Movistar. So we realized that quite an empty space in women's cycling. So we, as the unique pro cycling team in Spain, we began to think that we had to do something to try to solve this gap and close this gap and revert a little bit this situation. We have the knowledge. of running cycling teams. We have the infrastructure, we have the vehicles, we have the service corps, we have the professionals in terms of mechanics, physiotherapists, sport directors, everything. We have the contacts with the National Federation. Obviously, we are not experts on female cycling. So, but we began to talk with different people here in Spain, also in Europe, well, to know a little bit what was going on with the cycling team, and if it was or a real possibility that we could step forward and creating a team. I mean, we have exactly the same sponsors that we have in the male team. They move also to the female team. So it was also quite important because we began to talk with them, and all of them were like enthusiasm and say, yeah, we will support you in this new project. I mean, for us, it meant that female cycling was something of the interest of the sponsors, which means it's the interest of the press, which means it's the interest of the fans, which means it's the interest of the authorities. So, it basically reinforced our thought. So yeah, today is the day that 100% of the sponsors of the female team are also in the male team. So it's exactly the same sponsors. So it has a very clear situation, which is, so the women team will have exactly the same material that the male team in terms of clothing, bikes, helmets, wheels, everything will be exact, cars, everything will be exactly the same. So exactly the same quality, exactly the same products.
And so will the women's team, you say they're going to be all based in Pamplona, which is mainly where a lot of the guys are. How much interaction is there going to be between the two teams? Are they going to be on the same training camps, or?
We will use exactly the same system that we use in the men team. So everybody will live wherever his home is. But yeah, definitely the service course is in Pamplona, so we share it for men and team. Central services are in Pamplona, both for male and women. And the training camp, because we usually have just one training camp, one pre-season training camp. It's the only one we have during the year. And this year, for the first time, we share it. So it was exactly the same training camp for men and women. So exactly the same meetings, exactly the same medical test, exactly the same bike fitting, helmet fitting, clothing fitting, effort test, everything was exactly the same. So they live at the same hotel for 1 week, sharing meals, sharing meetings, sharing whatever. So it was quite an impressive, because some of the women told us that it was the first time ever that they were at a training camp, at a stage, which is connected again with what I said before in terms of using the same material, the same level of quality, the same everything. So we are pretty satisfied with that.
Do you think that doing the Movistar creating this team, how do you think that will have an effect on, say, like Team Sky and their very obvious very lack of female team now?
Well, we have had some, I would say, informal conversations with members of UCI, and what we have been told is that UCI considers that a Movistar team entering into women's cycling can be like an engine that pulls other teams entering here. So that's a little bit the feedback we have received from UCI in this case, that they are pretty convinced that some other teams will follow what we have done. When they say the good results, when they say the audience you can approach with a women team. So and we sincerely hope so. If other teams, I mean, I know there are some Walter teams that already have a women team, but if big teams such as Sky or BMC or those super big teams can enter into women's cycling, it would be extraordinary for everybody, because it will grow the sport, and it will also send a message to the society in general that no difference at all between men and women practicing or doing a sport. It's exactly the same. We can share everything. So no doubt that there's no difference at all.
And as far as riders, did you get all of the riders that you wanted for the team for this year? And will you be looking for more for 2019 as well?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is to grow step by step. So applying the same philosophy that we have in cycling until now in men's cycling, which is the combination of young talents and veterans who teach these young talents to make them grow. So that's exactly the same combination we have used. Obviously, some riders that we would love to be with us were under contract for next year, so we have not been able to hire them. But we expect next year to be able to have with to have them with us. But the idea is young talents with some veterans that teach the sport, teach the tricks to them to exploit all this talent. So that's exactly the same combination we are using for both teams.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kit and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much to RAFA, our main sponsor at the cycling podcast Femina. Their support allows us to produce these monthly episodes, and we have plans this year to expand and produce more, and especially around some of the big races and the women's tour in particular. Stay tuned for details on that. We're working on that, aren't we, Orla?
We are working on it, yes.
And in relation to RAFA, the Pedlers de Charme t-shirts really should be available.
Yes, Richard, they should. And just because you can't wear one doesn't mean that you don't have to produce
it. I could wear one if
quickly.
I wanted.
That would be a very interesting
Bold.
Picture.
Bold.
Well, I guess it's a bit, it could be like a lycra look on you.
I could pour myself into one.
Let's I think the internet with that one.
I'd probably have to be cut out of it at the end. But
for that reason alone, we should hurry up.
I don't want to waste one on me. But they are imminent. They're going to be in the shops. Well, it's the shop, not the shops.
Not They'll the
be
shops.
In the big RAFA warehouse. Although I don't imagine RAFA of a warehouse. Probably some kind of gold.
They'll be available.
Building somewhere. but yeah, they are, and they're coming. And the Pedlers de Charme jerseys as well will be available in March, I believe. So you know, I mean. Who wants a jersey or a t-shirt in January or February anyway? Really?
Very true, very true. It's I was saying earlier, even for an Insta story, I probably wouldn't wear a t-shirt right now. It is absolutely Baltic.
Even for an Insta story.
Yeah, that's you know, that's a lot. That's, yeah. I do a lot for an Insta story.
Insta Orla. It's the second new nickname in one episode.
Yeah, yes, we will. Yeah, let's get them. Let's get them for the spring time when we want to be wearing t-shirts.
So we asked for some feedback a couple of episodes ago because we're sort of 18 months into the podcast Femina now, and you know, it's interesting to hear what you like about it, what you don't like about it, what could be done better. We did a listener survey as well. One of the interesting stats that came out of that, and that was across the board, and we had well over 1,000 respondents, and 67.8% of respondents said that they took more interest in women's cycling as a result of the cycling podcast Femina, which is fantastic.
That's amazing.
That's great to hear. And about 20-odd% gave that a 10 when asked whether they took more interest in women's cycling as a result of listening to the podcast. So that's really good to hear. I mean, we're going to read out a few emails that we've had, or bits of emails. Indulge us here, Rose, but we'll, you know, chip in. I mean, I don't know if you listen to the podcast.
I don't even know who you guys are, actually.
Come on, we enjoy your work.
That's true. No, I do. I listen to every podcast, feminine and cycling podcast.
Sounded a little bit needy, that. Didn't
yeah,
it?
Just a bit. Yeah, and a bit bullying as well. Love us, love us.
And then we get into the bit where all these people say how wonderful you are. And
not at all. On the contrary, but no, I mean some interesting stuff that I suppose some of it raises points that we would like to address, and it's good. I'd say it's good to hear what you like and what you don't like as well. But I'll read out some of it. So Gareth Price writes that his favorite episode was episode 19, which was a couple of episodes ago, and Orla's soapbox and women's cycling. Why she passionately and professionally explained why women's cycling deserves its place in the calendar, this podcast and its place as a positive for women. So that That was Gareth Price. Stephen D'Souza wrote in to say that his favourite moment, apart from Orla's soapbox and energy balls recipe.
Oh, love for the soapbox.
Love for the soapbox.
Well, that's good to know, though, because I think it's really important to raise the issues that matter, whether they be political or not. But I don't want to be alienating people, and I don't want to be turning people off for thinking that
I'll get on to them
next.
In a minute.
Yeah. But, you know, it's good to know. It is good to know. And you know, we're not going to just pander to taste, but it is good to know if you want more of that kind of thing or not, or less, or whatever. But, yeah, thank you. I didn't bring the soapbox today.
A couple of soft ones there to start with.
Well, nice but of your husband to write in all
that. Stephen did twice. Stephen D'Souza also says that he enjoyed the interview with Lizzie Deignan that we did, showed a different side to her, and he was shocked at the lack of support from British Cycling when she won the World Championship road race.
It's interesting. I think most of our correspondents are male.
I know.
Which is very interesting. Jim Wagner said that his favourite segments of the Cycling Podcast Femina are interviews with up-and-coming riders because their drive and passion really comes through. And I like that because that's the point of doing it, really, is to introduce people to these stories and introduce people to cycling through, women's cycling rather, through the riders themselves, and discussions regarding the business behind women's cycling. He says, I'd love to hear more about women's cyclocross and its riders, which hopefully we're addressing a little bit with the cyclocross series. I find women's cyclocross to be the most compelling of all women's cycling events, and it truly outshines the men's events, according to Jim. He's given me his t-shirt size as well, which I won't reveal on the podcast, but Jim, we will get
he
a t-shirt
get
your way.
He won't get a Peddlers to Charm t-shirt, but we are going to give a t-shirt to one of our correspondents, and I'll say who that is in a moment.
You were going to read the next one,
weren't you? Because I'm still thinking about it.
Stop thinking and start
okay.
reading.
Adam Cotham says he enjoyed the feature-length interview with Tiffany Cromwell. That took up a whole episode towards the end of last year. She's always such an engaging interviewee, one who's passionate about her sport and really understands the potential and constraints of women's cycling. She's clearly someone who wants to help develop the sport and has great ideas about how to do so, with much more concrete ideas than just we need a minimum wage, which, yes, is true, and we don't argue with that. But what I mean is she then thinks about how we can make that come true. Getting her on board the podcast, a regular contributor, would be brilliant, in my humble opinion. That's Adam Cotham.
Yeah, and it would be good to get. I think we'll get more of Tiffany, hopefully, on the podcast this year. We've got an email as well from Nigel Manson. I really hope it's the Nigel Manson.
Mansell.
Oh, yeah.
Nigel Mansell.
Yeah. But he is the Nigel Manson.
As I was saying it, I was thinking, that doesn't feel right towards the end of it. Clearly, well, it is the Nigel Manson.
It is.
Nigel, yeah. I don't want to take away from you by being disappointed that it's not
well,
Nigel Mansell.
Nigel, just for if you're offended at all by that... you are the winner of our Peddlers to Charm t-shirt. So I think you have a daughter. I think you mentioned in your email.
Yeah,
so
did.
You will. A 9-year-old daughter. So she's going to be the winner of the Peddlers to Charm t-shirt.
So winner of the t-shirt, but probably never winner of any Grand Prix. And I will never win a spelling competition. Nigel Manson. Nigel did send in a lovely email, though, saying hi. He feels he knows much more about the previously impenetrable world of women's cycling than this time a year ago, and now sees it as a totally separate sport to men's bike racing with a different rhythm, feel and style, rather than as a less well-funded, which it is, in his words, inferior, which it isn't, again in his words, version of the men's sport. And as a father of a 9-year-old keen cycling daughter, this is something we are learning together. And genuinely, that is one of the most uplifting things that I think about anything you can do, really, is if you're helping to get kids into sport, and especially, you know, girls, because we do have the problem of girls in sport, then that's a wonderful thing. So I'm delighted by that, Nigel, and your daughter. But he's picked out some things that he really liked. Lizzie Deignan's interview again, particularly why she loves being national champion because she doesn't like wearing orange. And the very cute girl with a pearl earring conversation. And he's capitalised girl with a pearl earring, which I love. And the wily old local at the back. Lizzie, it's great you're here this evening, but it's Tuesday. Why aren't you out on the chain gang? Or sorry, on chain gang, with my accent. He's also put Alexi's tour of California diary, all brilliant, but the bit where she reminisces of flying downhill with Hannah Barnes, then both with big grins in their faces, just loving bike racing, in inverted commas, this is so much fun. The women's La Course atop the Izoard, watched it live on the telly and thought it was a compelling display of power and climbing by Annemiek van Vleuten and Deignan, and our reportage he really liked. And the Tour of Britain he's written, which I think he means as the women's tour, particularly the emergence of Cassia Nivia Duma, calling her positively Merckxian, which is lovely. And then he says, although not a cycling podcast highlight per se, the women's Strade Bianche was one of the most exciting races of the year across all disciplines. Too right, Nigel. And looking forward to a brilliant one this year. Thank you.
And then I've just read on his email. He said, by the way, in the highly unlike the event, you draw this out of the hat as a winner, put me back in and choose someone else.
Nigel, hard luck. You're getting a t-shirt anyway.
He also says, after writing Cassia Nivia Duma correctly, he writes, sorry about spelling him on the tube. Spelling Nivia Duma correctly on the tube.
Well, he spelled Nivia Duma correctly, but
it's quite impressive.
Katia.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, the t-shirts rescinded.
Give with one hand, take back with the other.
Can I just point out, Nigel, I should apologise because we've had to take 3 takes for me to actually pronounce Katia's name correctly, the Nivia Duma bit. So, from perfect myself.
Okay. The next email from Jonathan Smith. Also, he highlighted Tiffany Cromwell interview, as was Women's Tour coverage, but it was a Molly Weaver interview that did it for me. I follow her on Twitter, had noticed she was being quiet and then heard about the accident. Well, it was good to see her back on Twitter in recovery. I just wanted to know so much more, but had no way of finding it out until he heard that interview. That was covering her comeback from a terrible crash last year. And she's back, of course, this year with Trek Drops, a new team for her. You know, look forward to seeing how she gets on this year. Finally, we've got one more email, and this will be the winner of our t-shirt. I've just decided.
Okay. I'm glad we plan these things in advance.
Well, it's got to be spontaneous, isn't it?
This is from Joe Radford, and he says that he discovered the podcast in 2017, the year in which his girlfriend and he both got into road cycling. And he makes an interesting point. He said his favourite podcast moment actually was just discovering the podcast itself. I love both the regular and the Femina. I would actually like to see these names integrated. The best thing we can do to equalise women's cycling alongside the men's is to treat them equally. Why do you label a podcast differently for the regular and the Femina? Cycling is cycling. It's all great and should be treated and labelled the same, in my opinion. And Joe, that's a very good point. But obviously we have our reasons for doing them separately. And that's partly going back to Nigel's email, in which he points out that he finds that he's now discovered women's cycling to be a separate entity with its own rhythm, with its own style. And I fear that, as is the case with much of cycling coverage, almost all cycling coverage is all lumped together. Women's cycling gets lost in it. And I think that we've got enough there to be able to justify trying to introduce a wider audience to women's cycling in particular.
Well, there's so much to talk about as well. I mean, there's enough in men's cycling to have its own podcast. There's enough in women's cycling to have its own podcast equally. I mean, you guys do a great job in treating both subjects equally, men's giving women's as much analysis and content then.
Well, going back to the beginning, I suppose we were aware of you know, calls for more coverage of women's cycling. Absolutely. Perfectly justified and fair enough. A lot of the comments that we got about our lack of coverage of women's cycling, the reason being that we didn't go to an awful lot of women's races. Mm-hmm. We didn't follow it as closely as the men's cycling because that was kind of what we did. And to really cover this part of the sport properly, we didn't feel we had room in the regular podcast to do that. And so we felt that setting up a new program was the thing to do. And I guess just like women's races are separate and some of the women's events that stand alone, as we discussed earlier, apart from men's races, actually flourish in a way that women's races don't if they are in the shadow of men's races, as they inevitably are. That's not necessarily right, but it is true. Mm. I mean, I've no regrets at all about setting up this podcast. I've really enjoyed myself discovering much more about women's cycling, and I think, you know, judging from a lot of the feedback and the survey in particular, I think we've probably been on a very similar journey to a lot of the listeners, where we've also been finding out a lot more about it and getting to know the races and the riders as we've gone on the last 18 months.
And if you look at something like La Course last year, when it was such a hot potato really, and there was a lot of discussion around it, I think even with that incident, we would have lost La Course coverage a lot in the men's coverage, because of course you're looking at the Izzywad, you're looking at the Queen stage of the Tour de France, and it's very difficult to fit anything else into that. And yet I think it's good that we are giving enough weight to not just the racing, but the issues around it, which we had with La Course. But, you know, part of the reason, I guess, for setting this up, Rose, and this is where you come into it, is because we don't really have an awful lot of coverage of women's cycling separate to men's, whereby we can actually discover it for ourselves. And you're involved in the TV production of women's racing. What are the obstacles? Because people say, you know, people think that it is easy and they demand that we should have more of it. But bike racing is very difficult to cover, really, with cameras, isn't it? I mean, it's not huge, like other sports where you've got a pitch and you just put cameras on it and you can turn the cameras around one way or the other and you're catching action. It's a massive sport to cover.
Yeah.
What are we doing? What are you guys doing, right? And what needs to change?
Well, the key thing is that the TV coverage or the digital coverage is all arranged by each race in turn. It's the UCI put down... that will say this race should offer this much live content, it should offer this amount of highlights, but it's up to the race organisers themselves to arrange how they do that, whether that's a full-blown production, helicopters, several motos, finish line cams, static cams on the course, or whether they... I mean, we had... I think Binder last year was just one motorbike doing the whole thing. So the motorbike is stopped just beyond the start line at the start and then has to drive off and then go between the two, the breakaway and the peloton all the time, and then kind of miss the last 5K and get to the finish line in time to get the riders coming across. So you have kind of very small scale operations like that, and then you have much grander scale things like, not to talk about it again, but the OVO Energy Women's Tour having a full blown production is another reason why it was goes down so well with fans and the riders. But it's that kind of instability in that some weeks you're going to get really great footage, every shot that you could possibly want. And some weeks you're going to be thinking, I think it was Gent-Wevelgem where they had static cameras on the climbs for when the men came through. So they turned them on. And then nothing of the last 40 kilometres apart from the last 200 metres. And then you're kind of losing the story of the race, but you have to cut a highlights package out of that, which is a huge challenge.
So with something like Binder, for example, you do have a motorbike following the race from start to finish, so there's even with something as basic as that, we do still have camera footage of almost all of the race.
Yeah,
so why do we not see more of it?
It's like a kind of like men's cycling in a way, that the race organizers also own the race rights. So they choose where they sell the footage to. So in the Italian races, they sell it to Rai, and Rai don't necessarily want anyone else to have it. Everyone's got to give it to the UCI, but the UCI are only going to put out a 6-minute highlights package from that. So it's a question of race rights, and that is a commodity that is very expensive, but is, in my opinion, is key to the future of women's cycling. The sports that take off are sports which own the TV rights for the whole season, or the whole of the Women's World Tour, say. If they own the race rights for that, they could put out a programme that looked the same every week, that had the same presentation, that went to the same broadcasters. That to TV channels, mainstream TV channels, is really, really attractive.
Because it's cheap. Well, they don't have to do very much. They take the programme and they've got, to be basic about it, this is what television is. You know, if a company isn't spending too much money, if a channel isn't spending too much money and is able to put out a good quality broadcast, then they're happy and they will put it out.
And people are going to... It's difficult to get an audience to watch, say, the Bowls Ladies Tour at the end of August, because no one knows what it means, what it represents. Easy to get people to watch Tour of Flanders because people instantly know what you're going to expect from that. But to watch the Bowls Ladies Tour, that would get so much more exposure if it was part of a series that was on a programme that was not weekly, but for every race. Then you're going to see the same characters coming up in the whole race season. And then you're going to want to watch the Bowls Ladies Tour because you're going to want to see those same riders, those same characters appearing again.
So is it because the UCI doesn't own the race footage, the rights to, sorry, doesn't own the rights to the race footage throughout the season? Is that where it kind of come down, what it comes down to?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the same with the men's side of the sport as well. I mean, the ASO owns some, RCS owns others. And then you've got that thing where people aren't going to work together because they don't want to promote other people's races. Mm. But I think women's cycling has that chance, has that opportunity to become something that's much more cohesive, that's presented in a better way, that can get onto more mainstream channels. But it's going to take a bit of radical thinking, I think.
Is that something that's too late? Have we missed the boat with the races that have become World Tour now already? Or is it something that, and maybe you don't know the answer, but it's something that I always scratch my head about, is the, can the UCI now retrospectively take the rights back in any way with these races? Or, you know, is there a way forward that that would be a viable solution?
I think it's women's cycling is still early enough in its professional development to, yeah, to make that change. I'm not sure about like the logistics of it. I'm not sure if some, especially things like Flanders Classics, are really going to give away their TV rights, but I think it has a chance. But
it's,
I think it needs
UCI.
Yeah, and it needs a bit of action sooner rather than later, I think.
You could even do something far more radical, and I know it's been talked about in the past by some people involved in women's cycling, but you know, you could establish a new series of races. Mm. Somebody could come along and you know, because there isn't that history to the Women's World Tour. And we've seen with the Women's Tour again that a new event can come along and very, very quickly become the most prestigious race on the calendar. It doesn't take much, unfortunately, in women's cycling, because there isn't that same history. There isn't the same prize money. You put on an event with good prize money, great TV coverage, you know, build it and they will come. Mm.
But there is a reason that that's a standout race, because they're the only ones doing it. And surely it's why I was asking Rose earlier, what is it about the women's tour that makes it so successful? And why are other people not copying it? They're not copying it at the moment. And that is a problem. And part, I think, of the advantage of the World Tour is that we do have an echo of the women, of the men's racing. Mm-hmm. And with Flanders, with Ardennes Week, we do have a narrative that at least cycling fans can understand. And I'd be concerned if we take away from those races, which are an easy in for at least people who understand men's cycling, then you're starting from scratch all over again. And in the long term, that would be a good thing. But it would feel like a very risky move, I think.
Mm. I think also the key issue with starting kind of a new league of races is that the Olympic spots and World Championship spots are based on UCI points. Mm. And so if it's not UCI supported, then the riders aren't going to... I mean, it's happened before with, like, if you think about the starting of the WTA in tennis, that was a group of like 9 tennis players deciding we're going to go our own way and we're not going to worry about the fact that we might not make the Olympics, as we believe wholeheartedly in what we're doing. But yeah, I mean, it would be a radical move, but maybe that's what the sport needs.
Maybe it is. Is that all for this week? We've got anything else, any other business this week?
I think we've covered quite a lot, haven't we?
Covered quite a lot. We will, we're into February now, so next month we will be talking about the Women's World Tour having started. Mm. I'm off to a women's race end of the month, the Omloop Hageland in Belgium. Which is not a Women's World Tour race, but is quite a big race. And so I'll bring back something from that, I hope. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Orla.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you very much.
First time on the Cycling Podcast Femina. Will you be back?
I hope so, if you'll have me.
We will have you, of course.
If Richard turns his heater on next time.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
It's not the heat. It's not turning it on or off. It's the fact the radiator's been moved away from me and Orla and towards only Richard. Only Richard. He's also the only one who's got slippers because it's his office.
I've got a big winter coat around my feet trying to warm them up.
It all gone so well.
We have some women's equality issues here, Richard, to address.
It all gone so well. Now you're really sticking the boot in. Well, Rose, it was really nice to have you on the Cycling Podcast Femina. Probably the only time.
Until the summer.
Yeah.
When you don't have to pay for these.
I don't think we'll be inviting you back. But, but it was nice. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina in association with Rafa.
Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us and leave a review on Facebook and iTunes. Just search online for the Cycling Podcast. This episode was edited and produced by Matt Field.